You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with John C. Adams. John, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
John, let's talk about what you're working on now, and where are you? Where are you calling from?
So I'm calling from Appleton, Wisconsin, which is in the Midwest, pretty cold. It's actually freezing here right now. And I'm currently in a building that I helped curate and open up called The Draw, which is kind of my main project right now. And we bounce between art exhibits and music and a bunch of different types of community events.
So let's talk about The Draw. How was that started? And can you tell me a little bit about exactly what it is?
Yeah, for sure. So it's basically a small old building that was built in the 1920s that was sitting vacant for about 8 years. No one really knew what to do with it, sitting right on the river, which is a beautiful location. It just had some issues. It hadn't been worked on in a long time. And I had this concept of kind of opening up not necessarily an art co-op, but a place where people could kind of gather, communicate, talk, create, all that kind of stuff, with having workspaces. So we have about 20 different rentable spaces inside the building, all ranging from, you know, like a 10 by 10 little small room to, you know, 20 by 15 by 20 type of thing. So it's all working artists and creatives. We've got graphic designers and web developers and tattoo artists and painters, musicians. So a little bit of everything. And then we have a main floor, which is like our gallery and event space, which host different types of events and for people just to kind of come down and hang out and be together as a community.
And so how is that? I mean, that's pretty exciting in a format that's taken different forms, I guess, in different cities and everything. But how is this all funded? That sounds like you took over a building that needed some renovation and a number of things.
Yeah. So it was great. And being from a small town is a smaller town. I mean, Appleton's, you know, 80,000 proper. It was a little like metropolitan area. So it's not, you know, it's not nothing. We have Lawrence University, which is a, you know, fantastic liberal arts college, great music conservatory. So we've got some culture. We've got some diversity inside the community. But there was definitely something lacking, and I kind of saw that the visual arts scene didn't really have a home. It didn't have like a place to really go to and congregate. So this building was really, really kind of came out of nowhere. I was running some small pop-up events, some little like galleries and during some music festivals that we have and started really finding out that there was a need for it. And, this building kind of always spoke to me. So thankfully I just kind of put it out there, which is kind of what I've started doing over the last 5 or 6 years where if you have an idea, great. And until you actually put it out in the ether, until you actually like ask somebody or tell somebody about it, I really don't believe that it can exist. So
right,
I really
that's such
that.
A good, that's such a good point. And I want you to tell me exactly how, but that's one of those things that sometimes artists or curators think of, like that's a gorgeous building. It would make an amazing studios, but that actually happening is a whole nother process.
Yes. Yes, it definitely is. So thankfully, I lucked out and I put it out there. And a friend of mine said, you know, I know someone who owns that building. And I said, really? Okay. And they're like, they don't know what to do with it. They connected me with the developer, and we started a little dialogue and started talking about what it is that I want to do. You know, his experiences in the past. You know, the buildings, the other buildings he has, and he'd never really gone down a path of thinking in an artistic way. You know, he likes to save old buildings. They have the ability to do it. And so I really kind of pitched him on this and started, he basically gave me the keys right away and said, you know, start thinking about it, start, you know, going in there, start showing it off. And so I jumped in and started showing the building to friends, started showing the building to other artists and talking to people word of mouth about being like, hey, you know, this is a possibility. Ultimately, we got it about 70% filled before we even started doing any type of demo or construction on it, which allowed
70% filled means artists were committing to renting space in there for their
exactly
studios.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we had the building basically 70% full with it being a completely run down, no power, no electric, leaky roof, everything understanding the concept of this idea that we could build something here, something that could last for a long time, that could sustain itself by renting spaces, by having a communal space. And the developer, thankfully, was like, "Great, let's do it," and put up the money to be able to transform the building, and let me design it and let me fill it up. And since when we finished construction on it, it took about a year. Finished construction on it in late 2015, and we were 100% full and have been ever since. So we've fluctuated between a couple of tenants. We've had probably 10 or so people that have moved out, but there's a waiting list, and there's people that are excited to be a part of the community and rent space, and which really just leads us into the question of what can we do next.
Right, and so that's pretty exciting, and I want to talk about what's next. But you're articulating a pretty clear paradigm you had the vision for the building as well as other artists that you showed the building. I mean, in terms of them taking part of it, and that the developer supported that, so fixed the roof and all of that. Yeah, let's talk about the next step, because you talked in the beginning also about community, which is something that, of course, is so important for artists and creatives everywhere.
Yeah, I think community and collaboration, I think is ultimately, and this is kind of this building, this kind of idea, and this community is really based on the willingness to collaborate with other people and put yourself out there and it's harder for artists. It's hard for artists, and I think because they have such a vision of what they want to do, so to be able to like give up a little bit of their vision to get someone else's perspective can be hard sometimes. But I think if you're able to do it, even from time to time, I think it just opens up that ability to have a really collaborative space, and it brings in that community way more than just being insular. And I think having a place where we can all gather and be. Fosters.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because that sounds easier said than done. Like you're saying, there's also artists and their own visions and egos that are part of the process and not always easy to circumvent, but also artists, need collaboration and support and feedback and everything. So how did that come together? How did a community form or begin to interact?
It's kind of funny because as I'm saying that it makes sense in the way of we all need to collaborate, and yet I still think there needs to be a singular vision towards it. So for the way that this kind of came about was, I had this vision based on other places that I've seen, other places that I've been, coming together and collaborating with this developer who also had seen other things but wasn't able to bring in the people that I was able to do. But the reason we also decided not to, do a co-op or not to do a nonprofit was the fact that I feel like it needed a singular kind of driving force versus it just being a total community effort. Because I think a lot of times that can kind of waver. There's a lot of opinions and there's a lot of things. So even there's a collaboration between one or two people versus collaboration between it just being a community space, or it still needs to have that identity, and that identity needs to kind of be established by, a core one or two or three people that kind of focuses in.
Right. And so what was the next step? You said, like, where do we go from here now that the building is filled or initially largely filled and getting renovated? How did the next step of creating a community actually manifest itself?
Yeah, I think it really allowed us to, from our initial plans of the space was, I had this idea and I wanted to make it work of a gathering space and of a workspace, but ultimately I kind of told people that I needed to also adapt and be flexible. So like to do a traditional business plan of saying like, this is what it is, this is what I want to do in 5 years. That feels limiting to me, and so I never really wanted to do that. So really, how it's kind of evolved is we've really just been open to different events and having new people inside of the space, and really listening and being a part of the community in that sense of like understanding what it is that the community wants and needs, and adapt our vision to whatever it is that the community is searching for. So, you know, now we're seeing that people really love, like artists really love having a studio space. But now we're mixing this, like the raising prices of rent from residential and also from commercial spaces for them to be able to not be able to afford to have two separate spaces. And in Appleton, we don't have any type of like live work type of situation. So that's kind of like our next, we're kind of seeing that that is maybe a need, is to do some, you know, maybe larger square footage, you know, 1,000 square footage type of like live work for artists specifically, because we're finding a need that they would want that. They would want to live in the same place that they work, and then also having other artists surrounding them.
And so, in terms of the artists, in terms of artists interacting, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. That's of course a primary need for artists. I mean, to reduce the cost of live and workspace. In terms of having other communal events, what has happened there that you thought was particularly, because it's so interesting that it's, right, it's an open process, right? You're listening to artists and asking them mm-hmm. what they need, and or you know, to some extent. What else came out of that in terms of the conversations you saw having? There's needing more, as you say, live and workspace. Was there other things that artists needed or profited most from while also generating a community or having a common space where people can talk?
Yeah, I think so. I think another thing that we've kind of done is we've been open to different types of events, and you know, we started doing some burlesque and some what they're calling dark arts, which was, you know, more of like sideshowy, but like those things were really interesting because we started seeing that we were giving a place for what is seemingly a little more underground of an event or a group of people, and they were actually being welcomed into a very public, beautiful space, and not having to do these things in basements or wherever it is. And same thing with some punk shows. So we've really started trying to get these like other groups of people to be able to like say like, you know, we're a welcoming place. Like, you don't need to be ashamed of what you're doing. Like we're willing to put you out on our website. We're willing to put you guys out in the forefront of like what it is that like this makes us as a community a better thing. And I think that's one thing that's really resonated with people, and it's really shown, and I've gotten a lot of good response from that, because people are realizing that like, hey, we're all welcome here. This is a community space, and I didn't know this existed in our town. And why didn't I know? And I would know. And that stuff has grown. It's given those organizations and those groups a really positive reinforcement of saying like we're not necessarily outsiders that we once thought we were. And whether or not they like that or not, because a lot of people like being out. A lot of artists like being outsiders, and that sometimes is their identity. But it also validates what it is that they're doing, saying like, people like this and people are willing to accept us. And I think for this size of a town, I think that was really needed as well.
Yeah, that's so important. And that's such an interesting line. I mean, that's just the kind of thing I was after of events and activities that maybe weren't even happening in other models that you were looking at, because you said you were looking at other models of this type of thing, right?
Yep. Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah, there are other, I mean, and a lot of those other ones were really larger spaces where it was the more of a live work with, you know, a main gallery or a coffee shop underneath and something that was more of a community inside of a big building. I live in Chicago and we're part of a couple of those types of communities. And, you know, they have the, you know, Chicago Art District, which has art walks every month. And, you know, really vibrant thing. And obviously we're not Chicago. We'll never be, and we're far, but it has elements that we can start to pull in from our experiences other places, and that we can really start to showcase and really let people that are, because we do get a lot of people from outside of our own area that move in here for, you know, Lawrence University and some of the bigger corporations that think there's really nothing here until they start seeing it. And if we're not afraid to show it and put it out there, and, you know, that's, I think, ultimately the best case scenario.
So You said you did live in Chicago. You're not living there now. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep, I'm living in Appleton. Yep, but I still spend time traveling quite a bit for my job, which I work in film and video production. So I travel and get to meet a lot of, you know, great people and see some different places, which is fun. I love traveling, so.
That is fun and cool. So what other activities are you doing at this time? It sounds like you're moving around a lot. You've helped to create this whole space. You're still involved in maintaining this space and programming it. Is that your essential role there?
Yeah, it really is. I think we're also, you know, looking at, I'm talking right now with a good friend who started out by just helping us out in this space because we are a lot of volunteer and, you know, we don't have a ton of money to be able to pay people, but we started out, you know, I had a printer, a large scale printer that we all kind of went in to like own to be able to, and then someone came in and said, oh, I know how to use that. And I'm new to the area and I want to be able to like start something up. So I was starting to let him in and we're not working through, he's now one of our main tenants and we're now working through starting a nonprofit that we basically want to start doing some early education art classes with artists, which I've already started doing inside of the space. Bringing in 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 working artists that are helping younger kids, middle school and high school that have a ton of passion and a ton of ability that just don't have enough time in their school schedule to get the training that they need. So we're starting out this, you know, this idea of like, you know, what does it look like to have a nonprofit that kind of does that? There's opportunities with another organization called the Refuge Foundation for the Arts, which is primarily music, and they have a big facility. They took over an old monastery just down the river from us, and a good friend and are bringing in musicians and recording artists, and so we're starting to talk with them about collaborating on what a visual arts program would look like under their umbrella. So I think the next phase is to kind of look at again what the need is for the community inside of a not-for-profit arm of what we're doing, and then being able to like parlay that into, you know, a possible another space somewhere or combining spaces with another organization. Again, collaborating is just my big thing.
I love that. And it, of course, it makes a lot of sense. And it's a nice model for, I mean, other artists listening to this, other curators listening to this. This is something essentially that they could also do, right? This is something that, you know, could happen in cities all over the world.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it definitely could be a branch off of what, and they've looked at the Refuge Foundation of the Arts, too, has looked at other spaces, you know, to be able to do this kind of concept somewhere else, you know, music-based. But it works so well here because of the small kind of tight-knit community that has some has willingness to get behind something. And I think one of the great things about this community and the size of the community is the fact that it's fairly inexpensive to live here. And it provides a great, great way of being able to raise kids. I mean, I've got 2 kids myself, so I'm busy with that. But it allows you to try new things and to fail, and it's not the end of you. You're not putting in, you know, $100,000 into something to maybe make it work. You know, you can do it for small, and you can get people to rally behind you. And if it doesn't work, you'll be like, oh man, that didn't work. And they're gonna be like, cool, what are you gonna do next? And you can try it out, and they're gonna be behind you again. And I think keeping that community and keeping that right attitude of what it is and what it looks like and never over-promising is kind of the best way to go about it, and it allows you the freedom to explore a little bit.
I love that. It's very inspiring. So, and also is the fact that you have 2 kids and have your hands full in other ways. So outside of the draw, how do you support your activities? Are you also teaching or doing a number of other things?
It's really through my film and video production. So I work freelance, and so I travel. I work primarily in Chicago and Milwaukee. So that's kind of my which is that's the hard thing. It takes me away, you know, days, weeks at a time. So balancing these 2 things is really the hard thing, and really 3 by then coming home and having family and wanting to spend time with them. it's a struggle, but it's also, you know, the point in my life where I'm 35 and I've been successful in a couple of things that I've done, thankfully, and I'm ready to kind of just put it out there and keep on trying to create a better space. I mean, I think originally I moved back from Chicago about 10 years ago, and my good friend, who, you know, is also a musician and creative, he was moving back right around the same time, and we found ourselves at that time being a little, you know, we had been traveling around the country and seeing a lot of things, and we were kind of got stagnant here, and we were like, wow, what is this place, and do we really want to be here, living here for the next 20 or 30 years, and we found ourselves saying, well, if we're complaining about it and we don't try to fix it, and if we don't try to make it better for a way that we would want to live, and we were going to raise the kids, then we can't really complain about it. And that was kind of our initial kind of step into what it is that we're doing now, is just taking the reins a little bit and just saying, like, we have the ability or the effort or the energy to try and make this place the place we want to be. And I have a feeling other people will want to be here too.
That's right. It's so exciting what you've done. And I think inspiring to a lot of people too. Just to ask you a little bit about your film production. That's commercial film production for other types of things. Like, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my main, it's interesting because I bounce between, you know, my freelance work, which is all commercials, you know, national and local, regional, all different types of commercial spots. I'm an assistant director in Chicago, and so that's kind of my, like, career part. And then I have a small production company, which I'm also doing with documentaries and small corporate videos around here, and some more smaller end projects. I actually just got done doing a 45-minute documentary on a building in Kaukauna, which is the neighboring community. They redid a old 1880 factory building and turned it into the local public library, and moved it into that. And so we did a whole restoration, historic preservation story on that project. So we were in there from before they started doing demo all the way through completion, with interviews of historians and developers and community members and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of a passion of mine. I love being able to save old buildings, and I love old architecture and storytelling. So that kind of moves its way in and out of my kind of daily passion life added work kind of thing.
Right. So you're developing other, I mean, aside from the production work and your assistant director work, you're also doing your own independent documentaries of subjects that interest you.
Yeah. I don't like to sit still.
That sounds like it. Well, that's you know, I don't either. And I certainly relate to that. And so, in terms of the documentaries you've done, you just mentioned one. Is there another one that you're doing next, or that's in the works, or is that the one that's in the works right now?
That's the one we just finished up, and we're just kind of looking at, like, where we get it out to and where we show it and that kind of thing. And then I think once we start kind of getting that out, there might be some other possibilities, something in the same vein. But that's kind of the big one for now. You know, just some smaller art based ones. I haven't been doing as much video in the past. I mean, that's I went to film school. That's my background. But I think I have been so busy doing these other projects that I put that kind of on the back burner. So I'm kind of excited to start taking some more personal projects and maybe with some other artists, and maybe doing a small little, like, series of some sort for local creatives or something. I don't know yet. I'm still trying to figure that portion out, kind of in the more of the, like, structured figuring out of, like, what this is going to be and what it looks like, versus, like, I've lost a little bit of the playing ability in the last year or so.
Right. And what do you mean a little bit of the playing ability? The ability to, for yourself to play? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yeah. Exploration of, you know, of being an artist or creating and doing different things for, kind of really just for myself and for the need to do it, which I've always loved being able to do. And that's, you know, that's, I think that's the balance. When you try to create something bigger for a community, you ultimately will lose a little bit of your own identity when it comes to your creativity or your
passion of whatever it is that you're doing, because there's so much time that it takes and so much energy that it takes to be able to facilitate doing anything on a larger scale.
Right, that's such a good point. I've really enjoyed talking with you, John, and this and what you've done with the draw is fantastic, and I think a great model as other spaces similar to it are, but the way you've done it and approached it now sounds so interesting. Before we go, I wanted to ask you what you're reading at the moment, the question I ask everyone.
Yeah, actually, I've been reading a lot of Leonard Cohen lately, and I one of my favorite books of his is Let Us Compare Mythologies is a really fantastic one that I was just on vacation. I was reading a lot of, and he's always an inspiring writer and poet, and so he's always my go-to.
That's interesting.
And also he just passed away, which is unfortunate. This last year, he was a fantastic musician, and is a big loss for me, and that's kind of why I dug back into his stuff.
And the books you're reading from him, those are books of poetry or prose that he's written?
Yeah, yep, mostly poetry. He has a couple of longer form ones, but Let's Compare Mythologies is fantastic.
Well, John, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it. It was really fun to be able to think and think about these answers and these questions and try to process them in a fun way. So I appreciate it, and I really enjoy it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.